we're going to be joined by a chat with our guest today, Julie Jagoboski. Am I saying that right, Julie?
Yeah, I think so. Jagoboski.
It's a great name. Yeah. And you are an oceanographer.
Yes.
And you work for MetOcean down here in town?
Yep. Just between the two surf shops.
Yes. I'm excited to have you in here. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here.
And I guess firstly, tell us about yourself. It's not a New Zealand accent you have.
Nope. It's a United States accent.
Yes.
I guess the U.S. has a lot of different accents, but I'm from, born in the Northeast, born in Connecticut. Spent a lot of time kind of all over, about 10 years in California in total. Some time in New Hampshire as well. And found myself here after my post-grad education. So
you did your education in America?
Yes, Boston.
Yeah.
Yeah, so lived in New Hampshire, commuted to Boston so I could surf. Questionable choice, but it worked out in the end. So
yeah
it was great. And then basically finished my degree, and my friend sent me a job posting for MetOcean here and just said, why not? And then ended up in Raglan.
Lovely. So, yeah. And you grew up by the ocean?
Yeah, we were about an hour away from the sea. My grandfather lived much closer, so we spent a lot of our summers basically right at the beach. So it's kind of always been a thing in our family. Not quite the same as growing up here, where you're at most 5Ks from the ocean. But, we started bodyboarding actually when we were basically born. Was a bodyboarder for most of my life, and then transitioned to surfing. My brother the same. So, yeah.
All right. And Jagoboski, is that, what would you say, Paul, like Russian or Ukrainian or some of
the... So the name is Polish. My ancestry is Polish and then Russian / Ukrainian, depending on where the border is. So my great-grandparents came over early 1900s. And then we have... So, 3/4-ish Russian-Polish combination there.
All right. Yeah. And when you told your family, look, man, I'm thinking about going over to New Zealand. What did they say?
I think they said, oh, again? when I was at uni, I studied abroad for a year and then worked abroad for a year. So
whereabouts?
The study abroad was in Sydney. So I was at University of New South Wales for a year, which was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So I did actually surf at Bondi Beach a bit. And then right after that, I did a internship in northern Chile at Paranal Telescope Observatory. So I guess they're used to it at this point. Now, probably more comfortable with it than when I was 20 years old. And they're going, where are you going? But it's all good now. And my parents have sort of always encouraged studying abroad and that kind of thing. So if I'm here, it's partly their influence.
Okay.
Yeah.
How was Chile?
Oh, it was amazing. So the observatory is in the Atacama Desert. It's the driest desert on Earth. And the night sky there is stunning. Although it's also pretty stunning here at night. So I flat with Jess Hill up at Dream View.
Yes.
And the night sky there is amazing as well. So, but the Chile is something else. One of my favorite places in the world for sure. If you get an opportunity to go, I highly recommend it. And that desert is just, I don't know if there's words to describe it really.
Yeah. Is it close to the border with Peru?
Yeah, we were about 6 hours south of the Peruvian border.
Okay.
So Chile is quite long, and so by Chilean standards, that's close.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember if... So I went and saw the Nazca Lines when I never actually went to Chile, but I was in Peru, and when I saw the Nazca Line, is that in the Atacama Desert?
I don't know the answer to that.
Does it go that far up? I think so, but yeah, it was one of the driest places on Earth for sure anyway.
Yeah, it would be...
massive things that you can only see from like a plane.
Yeah, I think it would probably be part of the Atacama.
Yeah. That was super interesting. I love South America. Beautiful. Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
It was awesome to be working there. And the waves aren't bad either. So surf was quite intense. A few, slab barrels in that area, which was definitely a learning experience for me. But the culture of the people up there are amazing as well. So,
did you get South over the Galapagos Islands at all?
Believe it or not, yes, but later. So I finished uni. I was an engineer for a bit. Went back to do my postgrad studies in oceanography. And there, I actually did – my research was based in the Galapagos. So cool. I personally was not based in the Galapagos. I only went for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
But we were deploying ocean gliders. So they are kind of like ocean torpedoes that measure the ocean. So they're not torpedoes in any way, but they look like one. And they can pilot themselves. So they fly around underwater at the Galapagos and measure temperature, how salty the ocean is, stuff like, and ocean currents. And then we can figure out which currents go to the Galapagos and where the nutrients come from that basically support that ecosystem there. So it's really cool.
And they came from?
The Western Pacific.
Okay. Yeah.
So right along the equator in the Pacific Ocean, below the surface, is a really fast current called the Pacific Equatorial Undercurrent. Mm. Starts in the Western Pacific and runs right along the equator and basically crashes straight into the Galapagos. So when it gets there, it upwells. And that brings really nutrient-rich water to the surface that feeds the ecosystem there. Yeah.
It's coming from the north or the south? Or both?
Straight west. Oh, in the western basin.
So it comes straight over west. Okay, right.
Yeah. So before the equatorial undercurrent really starts, it kind of comes from both.
Okay.
So there's a lot of currents kind of around the all the islands in the western Pacific. And so that's a pretty complicated current system, but in the end they do feed into the Pacific equatorial undercurrent. We call it the EUC.
Okay. Yeah. And who's your man... Swedish guy. He jumped on a boat from, was it America or Mexico or something? To head into the Pacific to, what's his name? Yeah, it'll come to me anyway, but to try and prove that the Polynesian people might have actually come from like South America or what is now the United States or Central America or something like that on the currents.
I've heard about this. I don't know the details of it, though. It's one of those news things that you go, oh, yeah, interesting.
Yeah. That was ages ago, man. I should know his name, and it's on the tip of my tongue. But, yeah, okay. And what currents actually hit the Easter Islands, you know, Rapa Nui?
Oh, that's a good question. So that would be a current off of South America.
Yeah.
I wonder, I'd have to look at a map and see exactly where that is. To answer that.
I can't tell you exactly. I don't know where it is, sort of, is it longitude, latitude, this way, east-west?
That's east-west latitude, is longitude.
Yeah, longitude, I'm not sure where it is longitudinally, but yeah, it's kind of almost halfway between like here and South America, I think. Yeah.
Yep, yeah. Definitely have to look at a map.
Yeah.
Tell you.
Yeah, okay.
Quiz on the Pacific Ocean current system.
I don't know, yeah, these things just came to me anyways, but yeah, so... But anyway, here you are in beautiful Raglan. Yeah. You came straight to Raglan, obviously, because this is where the work was.
Yeah.
How long ago was that?
Just over 3 years ago.
Yes.
Yeah, so pre-pandemic.
Yeah, all right.
I feel like we live in two eras now, pre and post. But yeah, it's been a really good just over 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. We hadn't planned on coming here exactly, but... really stoked that it worked out this way.
Mm-hmm. And your partner, Mikey, who's not here at the moment, but he's a surfboard maker, so it would have worked out well for him too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Michael Surfboards. Yep, so it's great. He can test boards here and get feedback and stuff. Mm. And it's different conditions than we typically have where he grew up. Plus he gets to surf, so he's stoked.
Yeah. Well, both of you do.
Yeah.
And... Okay, so you've joined up with MedOcean, and for people who don't know much about the company, tell us a little bit about MedOcean.
So MedOcean is a marine consultancy company based here in Raglan. We have an office in New Plymouth as well, and we're a division. We're the marine division of New Zealand's Met Service. So basically, New Zealand Met Service does the weather forecasts. I think most people are pretty familiar with that, and we do the ocean forecasts. So for people who use SwellMap, the forecasts that you get on SwellMap are MetOcean's forecasts. Mm. So we're always looking to hear feedback on that as well. But so we do things like wave forecasting, ocean currents, ocean temperature, stuff like that. And if someone wants to build something near the coast, MetOcean can do a study to try to understand what the waves will look like and things like that.
Okay.
So that's kind of the big picture. But we also do some research projects, and so that's where I come in. I got hired to work on a big research project funded by the New Zealand government called the Moana Project.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a 5-year program that started about 4 years ago. And it's the goal is to better understand the ocean around New Zealand, including the subsurface ocean. Because you can use satellites and stuff to look at the surface, but understanding what's going on below is a lot harder. And that's really important to the fishing industry and anyone who does anything that involves below the surface ocean.
And how do you go about that?
Well, we have about 65 researchers, I think, on the project. Yeah, so it's quite a large project. And there's different components of it. So there's 4 different teams. One focuses on Mātauranga, so there's Maui Hudson at Waikato Uni leads that team, and looking at traditional knowledge, what Maori know about the ocean, and how that can feed into our ocean forecasts and stuff. And then there's an ocean modeling part. And so the ocean modelers basically use physics equations to try to figure out what's happening below the ocean surface. And we can create pretty accurate images of ocean temperature, the salinity, the saltiness, and current velocities below the surface doing that. And so I think João de Souza might have been on this show at some point talking about that.
Who was that?
João de Souza.
On my show?
I don't know. Maybe not.
Maybe on Aaron's show. Yeah, it doesn't ring a bell for me. Yeah, maybe on Aaron's show.
And so,
No, he does like the sand currents, sand moving up near the coast, is that right?
Possibly. What they're doing on the Moana project is they create a 7-day forecast. So we can get a forecast of ocean temperature below the surface, and then a 25-year hindcast, so a picture of the ocean in the past. And that's pretty cool because, say, a fisher has a really good season, they can go back and look at what the ocean conditions were and try to understand why. So there's that aspect of the program. And then there's an aspect that takes those ocean models and they go out and sample mussel genetics with permission. And then they can look at, try to use the ocean models together with the information about mussels to figure out where the mussel spat started from. So how mussels are basically moving along the coast in different mussel populations.
That's interesting.
I am not an expert on that, and I hope I explained it right. So then the part that I'm working on is called Te Tira Moana, or Eyes on the Ocean, and that's the ocean observing part. And so what we do is we go around to all the organizations in New Zealand that might already have ocean observations of temperature, salinity, current velocity, and we ask them if we can use it to create our 25-year hindcast, to put together this picture that includes actual observations together with the models. And then we're also putting temperature and pressure sensors on 250-plus commercial fishing vessels around New Zealand. It's a voluntary program, so they can choose to put sensors on their vessels if they want. And then every time they go fishing, we get temperature and pressure measurements of the ocean below the surface. That automatically get transmitted to us. So there's no on-off switch. The sensor starts as soon as it hits the water, finishes measuring when it comes out of the water, transmits its data via Bluetooth to a box on the vessel, and then they send the data to the internet. We process it. It goes right into our forecast to improve our 7-day forecast. And we email the data right back to them within 3 hours, so they can actually look and see the whole time they were fishing, what the temperature looked like.
Interesting. And that's on the anchors or on the nets themselves?
On the nets themselves, usually. Okay. It depends on the fishing method. So we have about 20 different types of deployments that happen, different types of fishing gear and stuff. And so some of them it's on nets. On trawlers, we put them on the trawl doors some of the times, depending on the trawler. Long lines, they can put them on the actual line itself.
Yeah.
It depends. We worked with and are working with ZebraTech, which is based in Nelson. So they're the ones who developed the sensor and the deck unit, all the hardware stuff. And they did an awesome job, right? It's new hardware, and it's just working. So it's great. So we and ZebraTech worked really closely with the different fishing companies and the different vessels to design that hardware. So there's all different kinds of mounting systems for different fishing gear.
Okay.
Yeah.
And would you say 250 or 350 vessels?
So it's more than 250 vessels and more than 300 sensors. So some vessels have more than one sensor. So if you've got a bunch of cray pots, you could, and they're spread out in the ocean, you can put them on different cray pots, and then they can compare the temperature of the different pots.
Have you got any idea what the fishing fleet in New Zealand actually is, boat wise, vessel wise? I should say probably.
So there's more than right around 1,000 registered commercial fishing vessels.
Right.
They're not all active. So I don't know the actual number of active ones.
Okay.
But somewhere, that ballpark.
Yeah.
And, some vessels are more active than others, depending on what they're fishing for, how long their season is, and whether they fish for different types of species and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the starter, I mean, say I'm a fisherman or whatever, I'm on a boat, I mean, what use is it to me? So I'm a hokey fisherman, say. I want to go catch some hokey. That's my thing.
Yeah. I really feel like I should have somebody in the program here next to me because they're really the experts on this.
Okay.
But
don't get yourself in trouble.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, what's really amazing about working with the fishers is they are on the ocean all the time, right? Like, and there's handed down knowledge and they're experts at what they do. So it's really cool to kind of get feedback from them on what they're seeing in the ocean and then be able to support them in doing that. So I think it depends on the fisher and what they're fishing for. So some species really seek out temperature, and so they can actually more efficiently fish by knowing where the temperatures are, where those fish will be. Some fishers can use that sort of in near real time operational fishing. Some look back. So say you have, 15 cray pots with sensors on them or something. I don't think we have any with 15, but, one pot, there's a ton of crayfish in it. Another one, there's none. They can look back and say, okay, well, this temperature we had, great catch this time we didn't. The other thing they can do is there are species that commercial fishers aren't allowed to catch, right? So they get fined if they catch them, and those are species that are supposed to be protected. So if they know where those species are, they can make sure they avoid them. And so that helps fishers fish more sustainably as well. And then sort of longer term, they can actually go back over the years and say, okay, the temperature used to be this when we were catching these fish, and now snapper have moved because of temperature. So the program is fairly new. We only started deploying our first sensors in June 2020, and those were prototypes or trial sensors. The rollout of the sensors only finished at the end of this September. So we're all still learning really what this can be used for. So we know there are certain things it can be used for, but it's a new tool, and so now it's really cool to see fishers really start to find new uses for it. And we're really excited to see what happens over the next year.
Interesting. So out of the data from the last, 25 years or so that you have, which I guess wouldn't be comprehensive, but has there been much change in, water temperature or, currents or flows or anything like that?
Yeah, so the water temperature around New Zealand is definitely increasing.
what did I hear last summer? It was like 2 degrees warmer than usual or something?
Yeah, probably something like that. We have, Met Ocean around and the Moana Project have a really cool website, actually. If you go to moanaproject.org and then somewhere in the menus, there aren't too many menus, so you should be able to find it. You can find Marine Heatwave Forecast. It's probably in data and tools, I'm guessing. And they show you if we're in a marine heat wave. So marine heat wave is basically the same thing as an atmospheric heat wave, right? It's when the ocean temperature is above average for that day of the year. So say we look at the last, for today, whatever today is, so the 20-something of October.
26th today?
So if we go for the last 25 years and look at the 26th of October and take the average temperature and then compare today to that, if it's warmer than 90% of that temperature, so in the top 10% of those temperatures, then it's a marine heat wave. And so, I mean, like I said, it's the same as a weather forecast, abnormally hot. And so if you go on that website, you can actually see if we're in a marine heat wave at any given time for different regions around New Zealand. And there's a map of whether the ocean surface temperature is above or below average. And there are parts of New Zealand that have been in marine heat wave for, I think, the longest ever recorded since we started doing this.
Okay. It's probably not a good thing.
No. And again, this is not my area of expertise. I am the ocean observing person, but you know, we talk in the team and try to stay up to date on everyone's what everyone's doing. So Joao's team and then Rob Smith at University of Otago is looking really closely into that. And it's really cool what the things they're finding. There's a bunch of news articles that Rob has been in recently. So if you Google Rob Smith Marine Heat Waves, you can find out more.
Okay.
Yeah.
Man, it's a lot of people involved. It's interesting, isn't it? University of Otago out here in Whanganui, of course, and University of Waikato, I heard you, someone mentioned before.
Yeah, Auckland as well. So it's we're just kind of spread out everywhere.
Well, that's cool. Collaboration of lots of things. And so you said it was in the fourth year, so chances of rollover to extend the program, high, low, average, whatever?
That's a great question.
There's only 1 year to go. It sounds like you're doing, a lot of stuff.
So we are doing a lot of things, and it's really interesting to see how temperatures are changing over time, and there's so many applications. So one of the things we're spending a lot of time on right now is what this is going to look like in the future, because the funding does end in March 2024, but we definitely want these programs to continue. Mm. So we're working really closely with the commercial fishing sector to plan the future. They've been awesome. Like I said, the program is volunteer. The SREs, sector representative entities, so Deepwater Group, Fisheries Inshore New Zealand, Southern Inshore Fisheries, New Zealand Rock Lobster, Pala Industry Council, they've been super supportive this whole time and really, talking to fishers about how we can make the program better, getting people to participate. And so we're working with them to look at what the future should look like, because there's a lot of awesome opportunities here, and we really need to make sure that we make the most of it.
Mm-hmm. So. And are the fishermen sort of all keen and happy to, be involved?
Yeah, it's great. I get great questions back because we email them their measurements every time they do a deployment. And so sometimes, they'll respond and go, what's going on here? So I think they're learning a lot, and we're learning a lot from them. And it's really important to us that this program benefits them, right? It wouldn't happen if they weren't volunteering. We're not making them do it. And so all of this data is really just because they're willing to do this. Mm. So far we've had great feedback. When we hear suggestions on things to improve, we work really hard to make that happen for them.
Cool.
Yeah.
It sounds really exciting, really collaborative. It sounds like a very interesting program and space to be working in.
Yeah, it's awesome. I love it. It's, right in between science, fishing, and the community. And we have some non-commercial fishing vessels that deploy the sensor as well. So the Spirit of Adventure deploys them on the Spirit of New Zealand with students. They use it right now to look at the temperatures that they're swimming in when they're jumping off.
Yeah.
And we have some students in Marlborough Sounds that actually deploy it on the way to school every day, and they're getting some great results. It's really cool.
That's interesting.
And some research organizations, so NIWA is deploying one right now to do a comparison with another sensor. Mm-hmm. So thanks to them for that. And
yeah, I understand there's, we probably shouldn't get into it, but it's not actually working collaboratively so
on this
much.
We are.
Yeah.
No, I think... we're hoping to work toward sort of a different approach than maybe it seems there might have been. We're looking at, in the future, trying to put together a New Zealand Ocean Observing System, and that's together with NIWA and other organizations around New Zealand. So we're pretty excited about seeing how that's going to go. And so far, the discussions have gone really well. So I think it could be a really... cool thing for New Zealand. We're looking forward to it.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah.
And you mentioned before about schools, and I know you were saying to me off here that you're doing a thing with the school kids right here at Ranglin Area School tomorrow.
Yeah, so that started yesterday, and then tomorrow we're going to be deploying the temperature sensors off the one-way bridge to look at the temperature of the estuary, and then...
How are you going to be deploying them?
Just with a line. Yeah, manually with a line.
Right.
Tie the sensor to a line and put it in the water like you're fishing.
Yeah.
But we're also going to put a bunch of oranges in the estuary to see where the estuary currents go. So if people around town see, you know, 100 oranges that just show up in the estuary, you'll know why. Maybe not 100. Yeah. 50, 40, something like that.
Yeah.
But they'll probably be very fresh. Possibly edible. I don't know what happens to oranges when they go in salt water, but...
Nor do I.
Don't blame us if you eat one and get sick.
Might get a bunch of orange trees springing up in the mangroves around the edge of the harbour or something. That'd be cool.
Hopefully we'll track down most of them. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like, you know, super fun and exciting for the kids, yeah, is to learn a bit more about the way water works. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and to understand how our local estuary works. I guess a bunch of them probably already know from jumping off the pedestrian bridge, but we'll see, because this will be the one-way bridge. See where they go.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Was there anything else you want to add? Have I missed anything? I'm just trying to think if I've covered everything you wanted to talk about, or that I wanted to talk about as well. There's climate change, of course, but, yeah, I suppose the data's it's not kind of really, you don't kind of know where it's at yet. Just yet?
Well, yeah, okay. I guess, again, I am not the climate change person in the ocean, so we have scientists that are working specifically on sort of the long-term temperature changes. And climate change in general impacts different places in different ways, right? But on average, there is a warming of the global ocean. Mm-hmm. And so we're doing some work within the Moana Project on what that looks like in New Zealand's oceans. And so there'll be some really cool results that are just about to come out on that. Something to look for. There'll be news articles on that on the MetOcean website for sure, and possibly in the other New Zealand newspapers.
Just wondering, does water temperature have any impact on waves?
Oh, wow.
I don't know. I mean, I just thought about it just then. I wonder.
Technically, physically, yes.
Yeah.
Whether that's an impact that you would actually notice, I don't know the answer to that. We'll have to call some MetOcean people who would definitely know the answer. So we have a whole waves modeling team.
Okay.
And they would be able to give a much better answer. Well, the way it would impact it is through, so ocean density, right? Is kind of one of the things that...
What's ocean density?
How to explain this? This is something I should have a good...
For a layman.
You know how if you have like a sponge versus a piece of wood, right?
Yeah.
You can like press the sponge and it compresses and the wood you can't.
Yeah.
So
the
wood would be denser because it's heavier in a smaller area.
Yes.
So, okay, yeah, that's what it is. So it's the... how much something weighs essentially in how much space. So if something's super heavy in a really small space, then that would be really dense.
Yeah.
But like air is way less dense, right? Because it's not heavy at all.
Yeah.
And so ocean has the same thing, right? So if ocean's really cold and it has a lot of salt in it, then that, say you have like, I don't know, a milliliter of ocean water or something, that's going to weigh more than if you have the same amount of ocean water that's a lot warmer with less salt.
Yes.
And so that kind of...
Is there oxygen levels in that as well, like that salmon story I was reading out before? Is that
oxygen, the two big players are temperature and salinity, how much salt there is.
Right. Yeah,
so those are the big drivers of how dense ocean water is. And that actually determines... like a lot of how the ocean moves. So if you have something that's super dense on top of something that's less dense, so something that weighs more on top of something that weighs less in the same amount of area, it's going to want to flip. So the heavier thing's on the bottom. And the atmosphere actually does the same thing. So like when clouds form, that's a lot of what's happening is there's super warm air at the bottom now. And so it wants to go up. This is really like, I'm skipping over a lot of things, and I'm sure there are people who are going to be like, oh, you could explain this a little differently, but I'm doing my best.
Yes.
And so that actually happens in the ocean. So say you have a lot of really cold air and wind at the surface. Mm. And so you've got like a really cold winter storm.
Yeah.
Over warm ocean water. Well, that air and wind is going to cool off the top part of the ocean. So now all of a sudden you have cold water on the top and warm water on the bottom, and it's going to want to flip. And so the ocean mixes when that kind of stuff happens, and it changes the temperature. Huh. So when we do the physics equations for how the ocean moves, that density is really important. And that feeds into how currents move, and then that feeds into how the waves move. So waves are affected by currents. So indirectly, yes, ocean temperature would affect currents, but not, you know, or it would affect waves. You kind of have to go through the physics equations to find that where that would happen. Yeah.
Okay.
So there's a physics lesson for today.
Thank you. Yes. I hope you're feeling all educated out there, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. Thank you for that. Yeah. No, that's you explained it well, by the way. Thank you.
All right. Yeah. Hopefully accurately.
And I think we better start wrapping it up. Anything else you want to add that you can think of?
I mean, if anyone in town is keen to find out more about what we do at MedOcean, you're always welcome. Send us an email. Stop by. Just upstairs there on 5 Wainui Road. And yeah, we're more than happy to talk about what we do and give you a bit of a tour or something like that.
And you were saying you can check out the Moana project on the website somewhere?
Yep, moanaproject.org.
All right.
So there's a bunch of cool stuff on there, and you can find the marine heat wave forecast. We've had a lot of people say that it's really interesting to look at, so definitely take a look and see what's there.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, and if anyone's keen, especially like students out there, finding out more about how to get into this kind of stuff, we're always happy to talk about that as well, too. It's quite cool. A lot of math and physics and a lot of ocean together. Some computer programming as well. So, yeah, it's a great local place to work.
Awesome. Nothing better than practical maths. You know, maths is everything, right? Yeah, you can actually use maths.
Yeah, I mean, and there, you know, MetOcean's here in town literally forecasting wave heights, so... if you want to know what the waves are going to be like next week, it's a great field to go into and something you can calculate. So
awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much for coming in, Julie.